A warmer Philly low! Welcome to Lovey Las Vegas for Cuscus Heaps with myself, Greg Heaps Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. Here in the first segment, we're going to recap what we saw from over 100 games played in Division I college basketball Monday. It is oh so good to have the season back, so we're going to tie a little bit of a bow around that. In the second segment, we're going to be chatting with one of our good friends, Rob Donaldson. He does a great job with the show slash podcast, Rob's Best Bets. We're going to be chatting with him just how he approaches some of these bigger spreads that we see towards the beginning part of the season, some of the betting angles that he looks at, and we will dive into a lot of the games that we've got here on a Rambunctious Tuesday. And then in the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Tuesday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter slash X timeline at GUnit underscore 81. Keep in mind, Larry CM, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter slash X questions today, proud to say that everything is now powered by Better. Better, they are spelled B-E-T-R on that, so you do want to be noting that, but they're making it easier to be able to get into the game than ever before, as they are giving you $10 free, no deposit required, by utilizing the promo code of VSINPOD, V-S-I-N-POD. Just sign up, make your picks, and you're ready for tip-off. And the college basketball season did tip off on Monday, so let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
We saw a pretty behemoth matchup for night number one between Florida and Arizona, and Arizona takes down the defending champs by a count of 93-87. No shortage of offense in this one, even though for Florida, they were cold from three-point range, 7 of 27 from the outside. Xavion Lee, in his Florida debut, he had 14 points, and Boogie Flynn fell a little bit shortier. He had 9 points, so that was a little bit of an issue. They did have Micah Handlog didn't come off the bench for 12 rebounds. For Florida, they lost the rebound battle by a count of 41-39, as he had Ivan Kovachekov, hopefully I said that correct, be able to supply 10 rebounds for Arizona. I'm probably going to struggle with that name all season long, but you know what else is going to be a struggle? Defending Koa Pete, who had 30 points, 5 assists, and 7 rebounds for Arizona, really uplifted this team to victory. And then Jaden Bradley, he was able to throw in their 27 big ones as well, so that was a nice, convincing win for them. Hey, first game at the Division I ranks for New Haven. They don't get the win, but the newest Division I school gets a cover against UConn, a UConn team that has covered over 72% of their non-conference games over the last three seasons. This was a spread of right around about 42.5, 79-55 the final, so have to give them a little bit of a shout out. Alex Caravan was able to supply 19 points for UConn in this one, but for UConn, unable to get that cover, and Michigan State unable to get a cover. A lot of ranked teams did have a little bit of a tough time in terms of these larger spreads. 82-69 was the final. As Colgate hangs in there, they are back to shooting it well from three-point range, 11 of 29 from three for the Colgate Raiders, as you had 17 points from Sam Wright. And for Michigan State, man, that was really able to help this team out with Jackson Kaler. How about him being able to supply this team with 16 points, 15 rebounds? That helped them be able to escape the upset, as Colgate was only down 3 points at the half. And for Colgate, they just lost a foul battle in this one. For Michigan State, they go 24 of 37 at the free throw line, 4 of 6 for Colgate. That was very, very significant in this one. Tennessee, they get an under, but they do not get the cover against Mercer, 76-61. Final in this one, as Tennessee on the closing line, they were laying about 4 touchdowns, and yeah, Nate Ahmet in his debut be able to supply 18 points, but Mercer, they do a nice job holding in their year number 2 under Ryan Ritter. Looks like it's getting off to a relatively good start, so that was a solid result for them. This was a team that was able to cover a large number, though. Gonzaga, how about them actually stepping up on the defensive side of things, 98-43. They absolutely housed Texas Southern in this one. Tyon Grant Foster, newly eligible, he came in there, and he was able to supply the team with 15 points. For Texas Southern, they go 3 of 21 from 3-point, and they shoot 25.4% from the floor, while Gonzaga, 37 of 69 from the floor. And for Texas Southern, they lose a rebound battle 56 to 27. So, yeah, Gonzaga had it all going on. And you know who else had it all going on? That'd be Illinois. They completely lambaste a Jackson State team that many people believe might be able to win the SWAC this season. 113 to 55 the final. They over doubled up Jackson State, and I mean, Jackson State, they do have a guy that was a former starter on Ole Miss, Sean Ruffin, on their team, and he was able to supply the team with 12 points. But for Jackson State, they shot 30.5% from floor, 24% from 3-point. In Illinois, last season, they were a little bit cold from 3-point, 17 of 37 in this one, and this was without Ty Rogers in the fold. Ben Humoricus off the bench, he goes 5-9 from 3 with 21 points. Tomislava Visic, he was able to supply the team with 21 points as well. You had David Miricic, he was able to come in, he gave the team 19 points. So you had a lot going on for Illinois, a nice convincing win there. And for Wisconsin, they were able to get the cover against Campbell, 96-64. Very reminiscent of their season opener against Holy Cross last year, where things were very tight early, but they pulled away late. As a matter of fact, Campbell was down only 5 points with about 8 minutes and change remaining. And then Wisconsin, they go on a bonsai charge to be able to win this game. For Wisconsin, they close this game out on a 27-2 run, spearheaded by the fact that John Blackwell was able to have 31 points in this one. So that was a nice triumph for Wisconsin, and they clearly are trying to maintain the fact that they were able to go quite a bit more up-tempo last season as they get the over in this game, and they do get the job done against the spread. Houston does not get the job done on the spread, but the defense, it was certainly there against Lehigh. Lehigh able to hold in there, but they do fall in this game by kind of 75-57 with Emmanuel Sharp being able to throw in their 24 points for Houston. Houston looks like they're going to be a menace on defense once again, as for this Lehigh unit, they were only able to shoot about 37.5% from the floor, and for this Lehigh team, they lose the turnover battle 15-13. Joseph Tugler did have 5 turnovers down low for Houston, but Emmanuel Sharp, he was able to be very sharp in this one, and we shall see how those Houston freshmen are able to fare moving forward. We're going to see how some of these other teams are going to be able to fare as well, as we did have some games of intrigue out there with TCU losing outright to New Orleans. I know that Master P has had some involvement with New Orleans, 78-74 the final, and New Orleans pretty much led this game wire to wire. I think that there might have been 1 point in the first half where they were trailing by like 2 or so points with like 5 minutes gone by in the game, but for New Orleans, they had a nice performance out of Colton Benson. The transfer from Texas State was able to supply the team with 22 points. Ja'Kavion Buckley, he had a very nearly a triple-double, 13 points, 10 turnovers, and 9 assists. New Orleans, 19 turnovers in total. TCU had 10, but for TCU, they go 3 of 27 from 3-point range. That was less than savory, and for New Orleans, 7 of 18 from 3-point range. So New Orleans, they get a big giant upset win out there, and then this was another sort of just set of intriguing games in general, as we've got the MAC versus Sunbelt battle going on. And if you, like me, bet a lot of these games, you probably were wondering how the heck you got to the cover in some games, and in other games you did not, as I personally was in on James Madison, and I was also in on Old Dominion, a pair of teams that were underdogs that led by 7+ points at the half, and both teams ended up losing. Akron, they outscored James Madison 55-32 in the second half, 85-71. They get the job done after they trail by 9 points in that first half, and then you saw in the other game, Old Dominion up 45-37 at the half. They get outscored 50-27 in the second half. They fall by kind of 87-72, and that's really been this entire battle. You saw Southern Miss up 38-36 at the half against Buffalo. Buffalo got the job done by kind of 85-79. Western Michigan was trailing at the half against Coastal Carolina 34-32. They got the job done 76-72. Now, South Alabama, they were up by 13 points at the half. They barely hold on 76-74, but a lot of wonkiness, harebrainedness, and you saw an overtime game between Troy and Kent State, with Troy pulling that one out 103-97, building off of that NCAA tournament berth that they were able to get a season ago. And Ball State, another team that trailed at the half 29-28, they won that game over Louisiana 75-64 to be able to get the cover out there. So there was a lot of intrigue and there was a lot of fun there. We did not recap the fact that Arkansas was able to house Southern 109-77 final in this one. Arkansas able to get a nice cover there, as Trevon Brazil, so with a lot of injury, He looked very, very healthy in this game. 25 points, 11 rebounds. He was able to give the team a three along the way as well. So he was doing a little bit of this and that. He had it all going on. And for Southern, it's a holds greater than the sum of its parts team that actually went 12 of 27 from three-point range. There should be a little bit of promise for them out there in the SWAC. But he just ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw in this one. And speaking of running into buzzsaws, for the SEC, you had a second-half buzzsaw from Oklahoma as they were actually getting tested by St. Francis of Pennsylvania at the half. They were only up by 1 point. They win by a count of 102-66. So that Mondo spread that closed in a lot of places right around about 31, 31 and a half, they were able to cover despite leading by just 1 point at the half. And for Oklahoma, the man that was able to spearhead this, actually a pair of men, that was in the backcourt, Xavier Brown, Nigel Pack, they packed it in with 16 points apiece. And then Cool Atok, hopefully I got that correct, off the bench, 18 points, 4 of 8 from 3-point range. And for St. Francis of Pennsylvania, they lose that turnover battle by a count of 14-11 as well. So Oklahoma was able to have themselves a nice performance, saying number one. Ole Miss on a big spread. They were able to get the cover 88-58 with A.J. Storr, the transfer from Wisconsin and Kansas, being able to supply 18 points. And then you saw Texas A&M. Night number one under Bucky McMillan provides a cover 98-68, the final, as Ruben Dominguez was able to headline things as he was able to supply the team with 18 points for a Texas A&M team that has a whole lot of intrigue. So a little bit of an unexpected guy being able to step up, and the dominance of the SEC was very, very prevalent on night number one, aside from Auburn. Auburn got pushed to overtime against a Bethune-Cookman team that I actually think is going to be pretty good. 95-90, the final. Stephen Pearl gets a win night number one, thanks to Keyshawn Hall bailing him out. 28 points, 5 rebounds, and for Bethune-Cookman, the way that they were able to hold in there was the fact that they did a nice job of sinking their threes. How about 12 of 22 from 3-point range? Seneca Wilby, hopefully I got that correct, he was able to do a nice job of lighting it up. 4 of 5 from 3-point range, 12 points. Quentin Heady, he was able to supply the team with 21 big points in this one. And they were playing without Zion Harmon in the fold as well. That's one of their main guards. So if they are able to get him back, they were without Dr. Bradley in this one as well. This is a Bethune-Cookman team that has a whole lot of talent. Yeah, Adario Morris coming off the bench for 20 points. That's a former top 25 recruit. So that was very noteworthy, to say the least. Alabama, a win but no cover against North Dakota, 91-62. They held North Dakota to 30 points in the second half. So that's very un-Alabama-like, to say the least. And for Georgia, they took it to Bellarmine, 104-59. So that was another one of those SEC teams with a big giant win and cover. And so was Vanderbilt. They absolutely house Lipscomb, 105-61. And I do think that Vanderbilt, when it's all said and done, is going to be one of the better teams in college basketball. Tyler Nickel, well, he didn't throw up a nickel, but he was able to give you 20 points in this one. So he did a nice job on that front. And we had some intriguing results involving some of the Big Ten teams as well in terms of the Big Ten squads that were unranked. I'm right now doing this as the Eastern Washington versus UCLA game is going on. And UCLA only up 36-31 with like a minute and change remaining in the first half. I do have to have this up at midnight Pacific, 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern. But for Penn State, they narrowly got upset by Fairfield. They get the outright win, but no cover. 76-68. That was a game that was tied at the half. Looks like it might be a little bit of a long year for Penn State. And it was looking a little bit rough for Nebraska early on in their game. They were only up 30-25 at the half against West Georgia. Order was restored in the second half, outscored them 56-28, 86-53. The overall final in this one. And Rink Bass, he is back for this Nebraska Cornhuskers team. He was able to go out there, had a double-double, 10 points, 11 rebounds. That's big for them. And then Brandon Frager, he was able to come in off the bench. He supplied the team with 22 points, so you had a lot of intrigue out there. And then Northwestern, they held down Mercer 70-47. This was a game where the line very much came into play, as this was a closing line right around about 25.5, 26.5, and for Northwestern, just unable to do enough scoring to be able to get the job done with regards to that spread, but certainly a nice number one performance out of them. And then if you're looking at some of the notable ACC teams, you saw Georgia Tech get pushed to overtime on their home floor by Maryland Eastern Shore. Not necessarily what you were expecting there. Georgia Tech narrowly avoids the upset, 56-52, and won the lower scoring slogs of the day, as for Muhammad Ciala, he bailed the team out with 14 points, 15 rebounds, also had 6 turnovers. As Maryland Eastern Shore lost that turnover battle 19-13, but Maryland Eastern Shore able to hold in there thanks to the bench doing much of the scoring. Maryland Eastern Shore only got, and I got the math all right here, 12 points from their starters. They had 40 points off the bench and 12 points from their starters. They managed to hold in there against Georgia Tech, so yay, verily there. You did see Long Island, who they are my pick to be able to win the NEC. They struggled with Notre Dame, 89-67 final in this one. Notre Dame, they're able to get a relatively solid cover as Marcus Burton looks like he's going to be rock solid once again with 24 points, and the Northern Arizona transfer in Carson Tout, just 2 points in his debut. He also had 19 rebounds, so that helps out. And then Virginia, they also Ryder 87-53 in the debut of Ryan Odom, with having a little bit of a unlikely source of a double-double. That just the Ryder, he comes in from Antwerp, Belgium. He was able to spy the team with 21 points, 10 rebounds, lots of international flair out there in the ACC. Not so much on the NC State roster, as they just bring in a lot of transfers, and a guy by the name of Will Wade to coach him up. 114-66. They absolutely house NC Central. Night number one, Darian Williams. He looked very good. Night number one, 19 points, 8 assists. So he got the job done there. And Boston College, back to being Boston College. They lose on the road against Florida Atlantic, 83-78, in a game where Boston College was leading this game by like 5 points with less than a minute remaining. And then they just let go of the rope as they are up 66-61. As a matter of fact, with 46 seconds remaining, and that's Boston College for you, ladies and gentlemen. Not necessarily great out there, so we'll see what sort of a season they're having, but in the ACC as well, one of the biggest housings of the night that is being had by Louisville. I'm doing this as there's 4 minutes remaining in this game, and well, Louisville's going to be able to get the cover because they're up 94-34 as I am recording this. They're were big giant favorites in this game. They were laying north of 30, and they covered this game very, very easily. Isaac McNeely in his debut for Louisville as I'm recording this, and they've got most of the bench warmers out there in this game because it's so out of hand. 6-13 from 3-point. Kanee Ruths, who came off the bench, he went 7 of 11 from 3-point range as I recorded this, so I mean, he had himself a heck of a game. And for our good friends over there with the South Carolina State Bulldogs, currently they have made 10 field goals and have 23 turnovers with 3 minutes and change remaining in the game. That is Louisville just absolutely swarming right now, and it looks like they are going to be a big giant menace this college basketball season. And then one other game to get you guys caught up on. We shall see if the cover is going to be had or not. Right now in lovely Las Vegas as I record this, we're in the second half of BYU versus Villanova. That game is currently 48-40, so we shall see what BYU is able to do. But A.J. DeBanza, he had a really nice first half as I record this, 26 minutes into the game. He's already got 12 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, stuff the stat sheet as expected. And for Villanova, they're actually doing a good job on the glass. They're tied up with regards to rebound battle 29-29, but the problem for Villanova is that they're not really able to generate any turnovers on BYU. And for Villanova, a 5 of 21 3-point shooting start for them. And if you're taking a look at the trends of college basketball, now I'm doing this as some of the late games are not accounted for because we had a lot of games that tipped off at like 7 or so o'clock p.m. Pacific time. And again, do have to have this up at midnight Pacific, 3 o'clock a.m. Eastern, so this is going to be updated every single day. Don't worry, I will always be taking a look at the betting trends and what have you that we've got, but through the first about 73 or so games that were up there on the betting board, favorites against the spread, 47-26-1. My goodness. Like, if you're an underdog player like myself, this has been a little bit ugly, to say the least. And I do think that that is going to be correcting itself a little bit more moving forward. And it has been a very overwhelming day. I was recording this with Rob Donaldson. I'm going to ask him about the unders because the early games went under. We saw, like, that Queens NC versus Winthrop game go under. We saw the St. Bonaventure Bonnies be able to play a nice under against Bradley. Things got very overwhelming. In terms of that 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time slate, as I am recording this, 43 overs, 31 unders, and if math serves me correct, we've had 2 pushes along the way, so that is currently 58% to the overs. So we have seen a lot of overs, and we have seen a lot of favorites, so if you take the favorites and the overs, right now you're having a good time in college basketball. That's what we saw in college basketball on Monday, and that's what we're seeing trend-wise. And coming up next, how about if we do chat it up with our good friend Rob Donaldson of the Rob's Best Bet Show right here on Cusco Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now a part of the Beats and Family Podcast. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. Hey, we're back here in Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Great to be joined by this man as we've got Rob Donaldson aboard. He does such an amazing job with the show slash podcast, Rob's Best Bets. He joined me so much on the baseball podcast. He joined me all throughout the offseason to be able to get us squared away for what is going to be a tremendous college basketball season. You're able to follow him on the old Twitter slash X at RobDFB. And Rob, it is always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Greg. And although we have a soft space in our heart for Major League Baseball, and now that has come to an end, our next sort of soft space in our heart with college basketball has finally begun. It's a revolving door, and we're talking about legitimate games happening right in front of our eyes, and I couldn't be more excited to be talking about it with you today.
Oh, I am so jazzed up for this. It was such a long time coming, and thank goodness gracious that we do have this great game back in our lives. And Rob, what did you just make out of the first few games of the season? Because we've seen in past years a lot of overs in the first few weeks of the season. We saw those games, though, those standalone games, very much played to the under end. We're doing this as we've got a lot of the Monday games going on, but it does feel like things have been a little bit more underwhelming here on this opening day than we've seen over the last few years.
Yeah, and I think the big thing that we're going to be able to pay attention to, and this is how it always goes in the first month of the season, you know, everybody has, I think, an idea of what they want to do when they take the floor. You know, there's certain identities that these coaches are trying to build into their programs right from the outset. But the reality is, when you're just trying to win games this time of year and maybe the execution is a little bit off, you don't really have that true form identity that we're going to see in December and January with these teams. And so what that kind of lends itself to is a lot of scoring runs, a lot of inconsistency with scoring. And if you're talking about, you know, these more notable games, like, yes, Arizona-Florida is a really fantastic on-paper matchup, but the reality is that maybe we don't really see the true form of that game. We see sort of a concept of that game take place in front of us, and I think that lends itself to just a lot of inconsistent basketball that we can take advantage of on the betting front with these sort of higher-end spreads.
Yes, absolutely. And when you take a look at these bigger spreads, what are the sorts of attributes that you want to look at in terms of taking a shot on the underdog versus taking a shot on the favorite? Because I do think that this is a one time a year where you can look at some of the coaches' trends and some of the teams that in the past have really blown these teams out. Whereas when it comes to more of the meat of the season, betting trends and things like that are something that I just can't really make too much of.
Right. I think once the conference play obviously takes hold, and even just a month and a half from now, we're going to have very different perspectives than what we will coming out of the first couple weeks. And when you are looking at the first couple weeks in sort of this vacuum, I think the teams that are consistently the teams that turn out the most reliable game-by-game performances are the teams that come out shooting very efficiently. And we can always kind of peg those teams, right? It was the Fran McCaffrey Iowas. It was the Nate Oates Alabama teams. It's the Gonzagas of the world. And I do think that, you know, when you are looking at even down the list of maybe like a Cincinnati or some of these other teams that have an offense that just on paper looks like it's going to hum, you know, maybe those are the teams you kind of trust a little bit more to play to their caliber in the early goings. And then as the season goes on, maybe kind of lean into those teams that do have that balanced approach or that sort of edgy defensive style approach rather than, you know, that jump shot heavy AAU ball sort of style. And I do think that's the trajectory that we kind of normally see on the betting front. And with the spreads right now all kind of being similar for a lot of these high major teams going up against mid majors and non-com play, I think we can really take advantage of kind of isolating those teams out in a vacuum.
Yep, I think that that is such great advice by you, as we do have Rob Donaldson, who does such great work with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets, joining me right here on Couscous Hoops. And certainly there is a lot of intrigue with that regard. And I mean, in the first few standalone games, and we're doing this as the 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time games are taking place, we don't want to make too much out of one result, but has there been a team or two that has surprised you a little bit? Because when I take a look at those early games, I know that they didn't pull it out outright, but I thought Northern Arizona actually showed a lot of fight, and out there in a big sky where it feels like it's as open can be, I think that that's a team that really just spoke to me a little bit as a team that could be able to surprise a few people.
Yeah, and I think when you're looking at a team even like a Drake, for example, that now has kind of a mid-major billing of being like a coaching factory and a revolving door of just natural talent that rotates through that program from the player front as well, all of a sudden, we might take advantage of how good Nico Medved is, how good Darian DeVries is, how good Ben McCollum is, because how many times can a program like a Drake, not to throw shade at Drake, because they are a team that just recruited or brought over South Dakota State's head coach that was a good program in its own right, to say, hey, be the head coach of our program. That's inciting or enticing enough of a job to steal away a guy like an Eric Henderson. And I think when you're looking at it from that standpoint, though, you do have to wonder, like, can we just trust every single one of these brands that are normally very, very good that are overseeing roster turnover or coaching turnover? Do we just inherently trust certain brands in basketball, or do coaches and players matter? And from my standpoint, obviously it sounds pretty easy to kind of peg, but I lean towards the latter, where I think the coaches matter. I think the players matter. I don't think that year over year you can kind of go through those cycles and just routinely produce results, results, results. And so although I think Drake could be very, very fine this year, maybe that is a school that you isolate a little bit amongst the many others that maybe just don't live up to that expectation that they've set for themselves with year over year success. And I think that's a really good way to kind of attack these early games based on perception.
Yeah, but I think that that's a great way of going about it as well. It's Rob Donaldson, who does such great work with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And when it comes to perception, are there a few teams that you look at that they get dogged a little bit too much, and that's a reason why to bank on them early on during the season? Like, I took a shot yesterday on Old Dominion, a team that had been down and out the last few seasons, and I think Mike Jones, I will use the joke once again, who, Coach Mike Jones, is going to be able to get things turned around there. And I do think that there are some of these teams that are able to turn over a new leaf, and it's much easier in this day and age, and you need to take a look at things year by year rather than more on the like last 10 years, because it's so easy to turn over a roster.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at a conference like the ACC that is very wide open, you know, over recent years, Notre Dame, for example, has kind of taken on this heat of being a very mediocre program, if not an underperforming program. But it was less than a decade ago when we were kind of looking at them as a top 25 program year in and year out. And who's to say that Micah Shrewsbury can't elevate a program like that out of their current perception into the one that has really been kind of the main perception for them for over the past decade? And I think when you're looking at it kind of in the reverse sense, I think there's a number of programs that have overseen some coaching turnover over the years that may just be an ultimate question. Think about Kentucky, for example, with Mark Pope. Yes, I think there's always going to be talent that flows through the Kentucky program, but we did see them struggle in a number of different spots last year. And it's a question of, hey, now that you're in year two and the expectations are a little bit higher than just you're in the door, let's just get those big wins and see if we can build some promise for the future, what happens if that promise doesn't materialize in the early goings? Like, is all of a sudden this kind of a very murky situation in Kentucky and Lexington, rather? I think that's an ultimate question. Same thing kind of goes when you're looking at a Michigan and all the expectations that arise there. What happens if it doesn't go well in the early goings there? Are we suddenly getting betting value because this team isn't living up to the hype? That's always a question that I want to kind of pose, even though in my brain I'm like, these teams should be good. They have enough talent, because there's been so many teams over the years with enough talent that just kind of fizzle out in front of our eyes.
And I think that what you're getting at is something that is so interesting. How much do you view sports betting and just college basketball betting as sort of the stock market, where you see a few bad performances, you want to buy low on a team, and then after a team just goes guns blazing from three-point range, you want to sell a team after they had probably their best performance of the year?
Bingo. I think you absolutely nailed it, because there are certain programs right now that are getting billed as if they are something that they've never been. It's an all-time high stock. And yes, certain stocks that are an all-time high can go higher. Florida might just keep building on the success that they built on last season when they won the national championship. Or they could be a 25-win team, and guess what? Like, that would be a disappointing season. And on the betting front, they probably don't cover more than they do. And I think from that standpoint, yes, there are going to be certain teams that win enough games to be deemed very, very good. But on a betting value side of things, maybe don't cover as much as they should, because maybe their stock is a little bit overinflated. Same thing kind of goes with the polar end, opposite end of the spectrum, where maybe you have a team like a Rutgers, for example, where they were at the bottom of the Big Ten last season, but now that they're kind of avoiding those big names and those NBA level talents that were very ball dominant guys, what happens if they go back to that cohesive style that's always worked under Steve Peichel? Are they now a middling Big Ten team? If so, that stock has enough margin to really kind of buy in on, and that's 100% how I view the sports betting market year in and year out when it comes to college basketball.
And I think that that is such a great way of being able to go about it. And that leads us into finally being able to break down games for the first time in 7 months, because I know that one of the teams that you mentioned in passing is Kentucky. They're between 29.5 and 30.5 point favorites here against Nicholls, with a total of 150.5 to a 151. I want to get your thoughts on this game, because I do think that it's going to be a really interesting Kentucky team this season. And I look at this total, even though it's a little bit north of 150, I just view it as a little bit too low, because I think that for Kentucky, they're going to be a little bit improved on defense, but I think that it's very clear under Mark Pope, this is going to be a team that's going to be very solid offensively.
Yeah, and I also think when you're thinking about, you know, how this game could play out, obviously Nicholls is kind of an in-your-face, bulldog-type defense. Do they maybe take a different approach when it comes to a team that is vastly more athletic than them? I would tend to see it playing out that way. And so even though a total is kind of lingering out there of 151, and I think that would be normally gettable if you could patch, you know, Kentucky with another team that's willing to kind of match their pace of play, I think it's going to be going a little bit lower, because yeah, to your point, Kentucky might win this game by 31 points and cover the spread, but ultimately I think Nicholls is going to try their entire best, their darndest, to sort of keep this within a decent margin for at least half of the game. And sometimes if you can't score and make those jumpers to keep alongside that scoring pace, sometimes just slowing down the game is inherently going to keep you in the mix. And that's what I think a lot of it comes down to when you are that big underdog. Play, cater to that under, because why try to hang with a team when you can just kind of have them play a style that they may be uncomfortable with?
Yeah, but I do think that that's such a great point by you, and it is something that is going to be of intrigue with regards to this one. And then we get to see Purdue in action for the first time this year against Evansville. They, once again, are massive favorites here. They're a team that's right now laying 29.5 points, 147.5 to a 148 is the total. And I think that that's such an intriguing total, because for Purdue, they've never really been an up-tempo team, but we know how efficient that offense can be. So if you look at the offensive efficiency, that very much points towards the over. If you look at the actual tempo, that leads a little bit more to the under.
Yeah, and I think with Purdue, this is one of the teams where continuity in the early going is such a blessing, because you can walk right out the gate. And although there may not be that unknown upside to tap into later on the season, sometimes when you're as good as Purdue actually is, and you just know that you're good, you can come out of the gates humming. And that level of competitiveness, that level of talent, that immediate on-floor production is going to be enough to actually get you far in the college basketball world just in general. And I do think there's enough unknown upside with the addition of Oscar Clough, with some of these kind of rotating pieces that Purdue has in the mix this season, as opposed to last year, where you look at Purdue and you say, hey, not only do we know this team is going to be good, but there is that upside to get even better than what we think they potentially could be. I think when you're looking at a spread like 29.5, this is one of the bigger ones that I think is truly, truly warranted. And I do think that Purdue is going to have a really good chance at covering that spread and doing their most offensively against a team that I think they kind of dwarf on that side of the ball.
Yep, and I think that that is going to be a lot of fun to look at as well. And then this is a team that I'm going to be willing to bank on their coach early on during the season. I know that Jackson Schell said the main guard for Oregon is right now dealing with a little bit of an injury, and that's going to be a hamperance to them. But right now, I feel like Oregon is a little bit too short of a favorite at about 11.5 to 12.5 against Hawaii, 145.5 to 147 is that total. And while I love the fact that Hawaii brings back Yetis Nemishka from a season ago, they have to replace much of that backcourt as well, which helps out with that shell set injury. And initially, Hawaii away from the island, night number one, that's not something that I really want to get involved with in terms of taking points.
Yeah, and Oregon's a perfect example once again of, in the early goings, continuity is very, very important. And they do have a number of guys who are returning from last year's roster, which really surprised. Obviously, this is still Oregon. This is Dana Altman. There's always going to be expectations. But I felt like when they were performing last season and knocking off some big teams early, a lot of people were surprised by it because they kind of thought they were a middling Big Ten team, not really that top end Big Ten team that they turned out to be. And when you are looking at this 12.5 point spread, I think some people might be remembering like the Portland game from last year where it went into overtime. I believe they were down double digits in the second half of that game as well. And certainly, you know, there's going to be some growing pains in the early goings for these types of teams and these types of spots. But I'm going to trust the Oregon brand and these returning starters and the talent that they have on the roster and Dana Altman just to have this team ready to go in night one. And so, yeah, 12.5, in my opinion, kind of like yours, it sounds like, is a very short number. And I would be willing to lay it, even though it's begrudgingly so, because what if somebody knows something that we don't? That's just kind of what you dance with in the early goings here.
Yep, you do as well. And how much do you try to take a look at some of those line moves early on during the season? Because we see some of them that are just so on point, and then some of these are as wrong as wrong can get. I still remember a few years ago, there was like a Towson game that went 20 points higher from the opening number, and it stayed below the closing number, or they say below the opening number, so it went more than 20 points below the closing number. There are some of these, like with Cal Poly, their inflated totals that would always go higher and higher from the opener. That was dead on right there because Cal Poly was playing super up tempo. But what do you make out of some of those line moves? Because some of those are gloriously on point and some of those are just glorious misses.
Well, as you and I know, Greg, these lines come out at varying different times of the night leading up to the day. And even the day of, you'll have lines still coming out, you know, 4 hours away from tip. And sometimes I attribute a lot of that line movement to finally somebody just woke up and ended up placing the bet, or maybe kind of their sports book that they kind of default to ended up posting a bet and they ended up dropping a lot of money. And that overreaction in the marketplace, especially when you're talking about, you know, these mid-major types of games where a healthy influx of money can actually look like a severe liability risk in a sports book's mind. Even if it's not correct, even if the bettor is wildly off base or the bettors that are coming in are wildly off base, sportsbooks are kind of forced their hand to sort of adjust that style, and all the other sportsbooks maybe follow suit alongside it. And I do think that when you are dealing with a volatile sport like a college basketball where you have Ohio versus Arkansas State and those types of games every single night that are sort of off the beaten trail, one, I think that gives us a ton of betting value to just follow our knowledge of these teams and what we know from actually watching the games leading up to it, knowing who's playing well, who's playing hurt, and kind of making our judgments based on those sorts of things, because we're not going to be influenced by these kind of crazy line moves. We have a good feel on where it should be, and we know what lines to target, and I think that gives us an upper hand when it actually comes time to place the bet at the window.
Yep, I am right there with you, and then I want to take a look at this game as well, because you're out there in the great state of Iowa, and the Hawkeyes, they get started off this season against old Robert, don't call him Bobby Morris, is about 19-point favorites. This total is in the mid-140s right now. I'm seeing that about like a 143.5, 144.5. What do you make out of this game? Because with this Iowa team, I don't think they're going to be quite as slow as Drake was last year. It was dead last in the country in terms of total possessions per game. That said, I don't think that Ben McCollum is going to be running it and gunning it either. And we saw Robert Morris play some relatively solid defense last season as well.
Yeah, and I think this is a battle of two different perceptions. The perception that Iowa is kind of in a rebuild phase, quote unquote, and that they do play that slower style that's going to be coming from Drake. And on the other side, you have Robert Morris, who went toe-to-toe with Alabama Bama, not just because it was a slog of a game in the NCAA tournament, but that it was a high scoring game that they were matching point to point. But the reality is, unfortunately, and this is the case for a lot of these fun mid-majors from last season, Robert Morris hemorrhaged in the portal. And in fact, their best player, Alvaro Forgaris, is playing for Iowa on the other side of the ball in this game. And I do think, to your point, Ben McCollum, when you look back at Northwestern Missouri State, when he was at the D2 ranks, going to the Final Four, winning championships at that level, he was actually pushing a respectable pace. Not up to the Fran McCaffrey teams at Iowa, but very more so akin to that than what they ran last year at Drake. And what happens now that he has a more influx of athletes at his disposal rather than what he just had in year one at Drake? I do think that we see Iowa push the pace a little bit in this game. I think we see a better scoring output than we saw at Drake last year with Ben McCollum and that Drake Bulldogs team. And for that reason, I get why the line is sitting at a 19.5 or a 20 out there kind of lingering, but I think that I was going to be able to kind of put their foot down and win this thing something like 90-60. And for that reason, I really do like laying it with the Hawks here on Tuesday.
It is going to be a lot of fun out there in the great state of Iowa. And is there anything else that you're taking a look at for this Tuesday? As we didn't even talk about the Duke versus Texas game quite yet. Right. We got a few other fun games that are going to be happening. Anything else that's really standing out to you?
Well, hey, let me take you to another perception, quote unquote, team in Stanford, because I'm a big Kyle Smith guy. I thought in year one, he didn't get enough credit for what he was able to accomplish. And yes, it was a very mediocre-esque ACC, and maybe Stanford wasn't on anybody's radar because they really weren't on the radar of the NCAA tournament for many points. But that was a much improved team in year one. And in year two here, I still think they're getting disrespected based on the historical data of Stanford teams and not what this team actually could be this season. And yeah, 10.5, I mean, if it were a more respectable mid-major on the other side, not to dog Portland State, but this isn't like a high point. This isn't an Ohio. This isn't an Arkansas State or a UCF. They fall in a couple tiers below those types of teams. And I do think that Stanford at home is going to have a really good chance to blow this thing open. And I think, again, you kind of think back to last year and the fact that they lost to Cal Poly in the early goings, and a lot of people are going to be judging this game based on that result. I think that's a mistake, and I do think that Stanford this year, from this game and all the games moving forward, are going to provide a really nice betting value.
Yep, and I do think that with the Stanford team, they're going to be rock solid this year as well, bringing back Chisa Mokpara along with Ryan Edgewald. I think that that's going to be big for them, and Mike Bibby brought in quite a bit of talent for Portland State, but how is that going to be looking night number one, and does Mike Bibby know anything about coaching college basketball? That's a good question. We know that Kyle Smith does, and we know that you know college basketball. Rob, you do such an excellent job taking a look at the sport that we all know and love. A lot of the good people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Well, hey, Greg, as you said it in the DM and as you said it in the front end of this episode, we have actual games in front of us, my man. It is such a magical time of the year, and certainly, you know, this isn't going to be the best basketball that we see all year, but guess what? It's basketball in front of our eyes. There are fun matchups already happening, and I can't wait to go through this season with you. And for those who want to follow my bets on a night-to-night basis, definitely look up my YouTube channel, which is my name, Rob Donaldson. I post every bet on there for college basketball. And as I always say, Greg, I appreciate me on, my man.
It is always great to be able to get Rob aboard. He does such an excellent job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So big thanks to Rob for joining me on Coast to Coast. He's now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. And coming next, it's always nice to be able to say this, I give you guys my picks and analysis for every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Rob Donaldson. He does an incredible job over at the show/podcast Rob's Best Bets, taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So big thanks to Rob for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots. shuts.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /xfeed at GUnit_81. We are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is pretty much time order divided up between the regular games and the extra games, and the extra games involve the teams that are in smaller conferences. This is going to be the Southland, the SWAC, the America East, the Northeast Conference, and the Big South for today. So how about if we do get things started with 601-602 on the card? Purdue is going to be playing us Evansville. For places of Evansville are, well, open to come up aces here at 28.5 to 29.5 point underdogs. So it's between 147 to 147.5. Did set my total at a 145.5. I'm in on the under. For Purdue last year, the lone real kryptonite that they had was their interior defense. They were well outside the top 275 in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage. I think that when you bring in Oscar Clough, a guy that was able to give you 12-plus rebounds per game, that'll be able to shore that up. And Purdue has never really been truly an up-tempo team in the entirety of the Matt Painter era. Like last year, they were 314th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. They were just really efficient with their offense, and this is a team that when they are at home, they're absolutely able to go bombs away from 3 points. You've got Braden Smith, who last year was able to give you 15-plus points, 5-plus boards, 6-plus assists. I mean, he just does it all. This was a Purdue team that at home last year shot 41.7% from 3-point range. Fletcher Lawyer, a double-figure scorer, was able to shoot well above 42% from 3-point range. They do lose some of those ancillary pieces, like a Cameron Heidi is now going to be out of the fold for them, but you take a look at this Purdue team and the fact that they bring back so much of that team from a season ago. Their top rebounder and Trey Kaufman Wren, and Evansville is very much going to be up against it. And Evansville team that they had some okay results last year, but they do lose a lot of those guys like a Tanner Cuff from a season ago, so they're going to be looking to replace a lot of those guys. That's been a big issue for the Evansville team. Every single time they get someone that is a big time producer, they just decide that they're going to be able to hit the transfer portal. But Connor Turnbull at 6'10" should be able to help this team out a little bit down the last year. About 9.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game began his career at Butler, so he's got some high level experience. And then you've got Joshua Hughes back in the fold as well. This is a guy that stands right around about 6'10". He was able to give the team 5 rebounds per game. This team is probably going to be lacking a little bit in the backcourt. They're going to be having to rely upon Alex Hemingway, who he's an upside guy. When he was over at Clemson a few seasons ago, was able to put in there during the 2022-23 season 7 points per contest on 47% 3-point shooting. Has only played 5 games over the last 2 seasons though, so you just don't know what you're going to be able to get there for this Evansville team as well. The overall ball handling, I think, is going to be an issue, and I think Purdue on their home floor, they are absolutely going to be able to roll in this one, even with Evansville bringing in a guy like an AJ Casey, who began his career over at Miami, just has not been able to get out there on the floor due to injury. So I set my line at a 31.5. I'm willing to lay up to 31 here with Purdue, and I do think that this is going to be a little bit of an underwhelming game. It's an Evansville team that has been relatively mid-tempo under this current coaching regime, but I do think that Purdue is going to be able to put the clamps down on defense, so I do like that under to go along with Purdue laying the number. 603-604 on the betting board. It is Mount St. Mary's and the Mount. They are going to be on the road against West Virginia. West Virginia is a favorite of 16 points total. This game is between 136.5 to 138. I'm going to be diving in on the under semi-total at a 133.5. You bring in Ross Hodge as the coach for West Virginia after North Texas was in the bottom 10 in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game, and it's not like this is a Mount St. Mary's team that's absolutely going to be looking to run it and gun it themselves. Mount St. Mary's is traditionally a team that's going to find themselves outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game. They sped themselves up a little bit 2 years ago, and then they fell back, and they were really playing slowly last year. When this Mount St. Mary's team is firing on all cylinders, typically it's because they've got good rebounding. They lose a guy like Adola Adebayo that I think is really going to be hurting them, and as a result, I did set West Virginia as more of a 17.5-point favorite, so I'm going to be willing to lay up to 17 with them as they bring in West Virginia as Horland Obiana. He was over at UNC Wilmington last year, giving that team 6-plus rebounds per game, a true 7-footer, so Mount St. Mary's going to be up against it a little bit there. They do bring in, though, Mount St. Mary's does Justin Amadi. He's had some relatively good production over at James Madison. You go back to the 2021-22 campaign, he was the guy that was putting in their 9.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game. Not a lot of versatility, though, at 6'7", so he's not going to be spacing the floor or anything like that. And then additionally, they're going to be looking in the backcourt to Xavier Lipscomb to be able to step up, who I still remember a few years ago when he was over at Radford shot 46% from three-point range. Last year, he became a nice facilitator, about 7 points, 4.5 assists per game. So that is going to be able to give a little bit of leadership to the backcourt, but you don't necessarily have those high-level shooters that are going to be all around him. And then they're taking a shot on some younger guys out there down low, like they bring in, hopefully I get this correct, Hakai Diop. He's a true 7-footer that comes in from the country of Senegal, so we shall see what those guys are going to be able to do. And with West Virginia, I do think that bringing in Trayson Eaglestaff is really going to be able to give this team some nice scoring punch. He was over at North Dakota last year, where he was putting in there over 18 points per contest, had that nice expose against Alabama last season. Then you're able to pair him up very well with Hunter Huff. Hunter Huff, 15 points per contest over at Chattanooga, a 41% three-point shooter. How he's going to do outside of that Coach Earl style, because in the time that he spent away from Coach Earl, he did struggle a little bit. That's going to be a little bit of a question mark for this unit, but still, this is going to be a team that plays some very positionless basketball. Eaglestaff is a guy that stands right around about 6'6". Jasper Floyd is just a do-it-all sort of guy. Last year at North Texas, he follows his coach on over. 9 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, mid-30s three-point shooter. Brennan Lorient, he comes on over from North Texas as well. Nearly 12 points, 5 rebounds. He actually did shoot 47% from three. It wasn't on a high amount of shots, but I mean, at 6'9", he's going to be able to space the floor along with 6'6", Chance Moore, who was that top scorer over at Missouri State. So I do think that this is going to be a West Virginia team that should be able to roll in this spot. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 17 points with them, and I think that West Virginia continues that slow and controlled style. I made my total a 133.5, so I like the under. 6-5, 6-6 on the betting board. East Carolina is going to be playing host to Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern, an underdog of 7.5 to 8 points. Dallas game between 148 to a 148.5. Semi-line at 7.5. 8 is my minimum buy point here on Georgia Southern. With Georgia Southern, I do think that there's quite a bit of upside with the fact that they bring back a lot of their guys from a season ago, and this is an East Carolina team that they really didn't have a lot of depth last season, and they lost a lot of those guys that were really explosive for them, for lack of a better term. So I do think that this is going to be a little bit of a changing of the guard for an East Carolina team that they've been very good on glass. Last year, a top 35 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that resulted in an offensive rebound, but RJ Felton was doing a little bit of everything with 18 points per contest. Now they lose him. Now they bring in LaDante Felton as a freshman, but it's not going to be quite the same as RJ Felton. They've got Travion Liberio. Hopefully I said that correct. He comes back after he gave the team 4 rebounds per game and a block per contest as a starter down low. So he's going to be able to help out there. He's just 6'3", so he's a little bit undersized. Not going to matter as much in this game, but Georgia Southern, they do have a few guys with size of their own. They're going to be looking to as well this East Carolina team. Deshaun Woodyard, who last year was a part-time starter, was putting in there about 6 points, 4 boards per contest. But East Carolina last year was one of the worst teams in terms of three-point shooting in all of college basketball, and they really didn't address that. They shot about 31.6% from three-point range a season ago, and with regards to where you're going to be able to get on the flip side, Georgia Southern is not necessarily going to be a team that's going to light you up from three-point range as well, but this is going to be a team that I think is going to be able to take the fight to East Carolina down low. They do have Jefferson Koulibaly in the backcourt. Koulibaly comes over after he had Pacific last year. 6.5 points, mid-30s three-point shooter, so he should be able to give them a little bit of pop there. And then Tyron Moore, he is able to give you more. Dealt with a little bit of injury a few seasons ago. He began his career over at Georgia Southern 2 years ago during the 2023-24 season, averaged 17 points per contest, went on over to UAB, where he was still productive with 6 points per game, career 38% three-point shooter. He's decided to be a boomerang transfer and come back into this program, and then you're able to pair him up with the KVN White. 6'7", nice versatile player that was able to give you 10.5 points, 3.5 boards, 2.5 assists. I do think that Georgia Southern has some upside. They're going to need to stay away from the turnovers. They, throughout this coaching regime, have been outside the top 250 in terms of ball security, turned the ball over about 13.5 times per contest last season, but I do think that the fact that they are able to bring back a guy that has so much familiarity with Moore is going to be able to help them out. So being able to get A+, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern was actually a relatively high tempo team last year in the top 100 in terms of total possessions per game. East Carolina, they're a little bit more of a slow team, so going to be interesting with regards to total. I set mine at a 145.5, so to go along with the points with Georgia Southern, I'm in on the under. 607, 608 on the card. South Carolina plays also North Carolina A&T. A&T is a 20.5 point underdog. 143 to 143.5 is the total line. I did set South Carolina as a 21.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 21 with them. With North Carolina A&T, they just have lost so many guys over the last few seasons. They actually picked up a little bit of steam last season when they suspended like 3 out of their top 4 scorers. I'm not sure what was going on with that, but all of a sudden they went from playing no defense whatsoever to playing a lick of defense, which was really nice, but they lose all those guys from a season ago, like Nicholas Chakoudalis. He was a really good rebounder for this team, and now you have to wonder who's going to be able to step up down low. They're probably going to be looking a lot to Amid Dumbuya, who comes on over from UMass. He was unable to get out there on the floor too much, but he provides a good body at about 6'11". You've got another 6'11" big man in Steph Pharos Kalatinas, who was able to supply about 3.5 rebounds per game as a part-time starter for the team a season ago. They're going to need him to take some strides forward, and you just have to wonder if Trent Middleton Jr. is really able to be the head of the stake for this backcourt. He was a nice reserve over at Delaware last year, averaging about 5.5 points per contest. Took a big drop-off last year with his three-point shooting. As a freshman at Ball State, shot 43% from three. Last year, that was down below 30% from three. Think that that's going to be somewhere between A and B, but this is a North Carolina A&T team that it just feels like they're a little bit rudderless. They bring back Will Fulton down low, so they're going to have some nice low post pieces, but that backcourt has a lot to be desired, and I recognize that this is a South Carolina team that is not going to be terrorizing the SEC, but I mean, if South Carolina was not in the SEC, they'd be towards the middle slash upper half of pretty much any other conference in all of college basketball, and they get back Meechie Johnson for a second time. Meechie Johnson has found out that home is where South Carolina is. When he was last at South Carolina 2 years ago, 14 points per contest, about a 32% three-point shooter. He's able to dole out about 3 assists per game. Last year at Ohio State was limited to 10 games. Still put in there 9 points per contest. He was relatively solid on that front, and I do think that for South Carolina, they're going to be able to have a lot of versatility with bringing in Mongolian Mike, who at 6'9", he'll give you like 8 points, 3 assists, 4 boards. Doesn't necessarily do one thing great, but does everything relatively solid. And Miles Stute, he's a 6'7" guy that is a career 37.5% three-point shooter. Last year, down year for him with about 5.5 points per contest. When they made the NCAA tournament, he was putting in their 8.5 points per game. I think that he takes a little bit of a stride forward, and with North Carolina A&T having just a lot of issues in general, and with Kobe Knox coming into the program from South Florida, where he was a rock-solid starter, putting in their double figures, was able to shoot in the mid-30s from three-point range, I think that North Carolina A&T gets blown away, and I do think that South Carolina is going to be able to maintain a relatively slow and controlled style under this current coaching regime under Paris LeMond. They've always been, South Carolina's been outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game, and I think that North Carolina A&T, with losing their main guards from a season ago, they're going to be playing some sloppy basketball. So I did set my total here at a 137.5. I'm going to be willing to lay with South Carolina, and I'm in on this total under. 609, 610 on the betting board of Velo Paraiso is going to be playing us at Eastern Illinois. Eastern Illinois, an underdog of 7.5 points, so on this game between 143.5 to a 144.5, and with Valparaiso, could only set them at 6-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take a shot here on Eastern Illinois. Eastern Illinois has been doing a slow build under Marty Simmons. For Eastern Illinois, this has been a team that's been, well, not necessarily one of the better teams in all of college basketball, to put it politely, but it does feel like they've got a little bit of upside, and it feels like just with the fact that they didn't lose their entire team via the transfer portal, unlike recent years, that that's a big giant win for this team. Bringing back Zion Frewster is big, as he was able to supply the team with about 11 points per contest, shot 35% from three, but the real key here is 6'7", Mr. Do-It-All in Cooper Jacoby. Cooper Jacoby was limited due to injury during the 2023-24 season, where it looked like things were rocking and rolling. Came back for a full season last year, where he supplied 12 points, a steal, 9 rebounds per game, and having a guy like that back is going to allow this team to be able to win the battle on the glass. Do have some question mark in the backcourt. You're going to be looking at Kyle Layton, who he comes on over from Tennessee Tech, where he was a starter, 8 points, 35% 3-point shooter, doled out about 2 assists per contest. You don't necessarily have that main primary ball handler, but Andre 3000 Washington, who comes over after he was over at Long Island last season, he should be able to help out a little bit more on that front as well. And then for Valparaiso, they lose Always Wright, who is really good in the backcourt, and yes, that was one of the best names in all of college basketball. Mr. Wright being out of the fold means that they're going to be in a lot of transition with regards to this backcourt. They're going to be looking to someone like a Justice McNair, who he was a reserve last year that gave the team about 4.5 points per contest. I believe that he has a little bit of propensity to be able to give this team some nice ball handling, so we'll see what he's going to be able to do on that front. You're going to be looking a little bit down low to some mysterious guys like a Carter Hopi, who comes over from the country of New Zealand. They went the international route there. He's probably going to be seeing a lot of minutes right away. You're going to be looking at Mark Brown needing to step up in this backcourt as well. Comes in from the non-Division I ranks, where he put up some nice numbers, but what is he going to be able to do at the Division I level? And then they bring in Isaiah Barnes, who began his career over at Michigan. Solid player last year as a starter at Tulsa. 9.5 points, 4.5 boards, but again, not a guy that's going to give you a lot of leadership in the backcourt. It's a Valparaiso team that has been neither here nor there with with regards to their tempo and their style. It just feels like every single year you have no consistency whatsoever. And really, ever since they went from the Rising League to the Missouri Valley Conference, it just has not been going well for them. And I think that Eastern Illinois has a nice advantage down low, and I think that they hold in this game. Set by line at 6, I'm going to be willing to take the points here with Eastern Illinois. Set by total 142, Eastern Illinois, a little bit more of a slow and controlled team. I like the under. 6-11, 6-12 on the betting board. It is Oklahoma State playing us at Oral Roberts. Bobby Roberts is an underdog of 19-19.5 points. So on this game, between 157.5 to a 158. This time I total at a 150.5. I like the under. Now, Steve Lutz's Oklahoma State team is a team that absolutely guns it. And you go back to his time at Western Kentucky when he had the one season there. They were one of the fastest teams in all of college basketball. From for Oklahoma State last year, they were well outside the top 225 in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per possession basis as Lutz was trying to break in his system. Oklahoma State last year was 31st in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Oral Roberts was actually a mid-tempo team last season, but they had to move on from their coach in Russell Springman after it just was not working out for them in the 2 years that he was there. They are still trying to be able to figure out how to be able to get things up and running after they made the NCAA tournament many years ago. We all recall that nice Sweet 16 run, and ever since then, things have went down the toilet bowl for them. But for Oral Roberts, I do think that there's a little bit of upside with regards to this backcourt. Bringing in a guy like a Ty Harper, I think, is a good place to start. 10-point-per-game scorer over at Youngstown State, mid-30s three-point shooter. Not necessarily going to be a primary ball handler or anything like that, but he's someone that is going to be able to take the load off of some of these guys. And I love the pickup of Yetu Yamanashi-Williams. At 6'10", he's one of the more underrated versatile guys in college basketball. Was limited to 12 games 2 seasons ago, just was unable to get out there on the floor last year due to injury, but last we saw him at Portland, he was averaging 8.5 points, shot 36% from 3, supplied 5 rebounds per game at 6'10", so I mean, that's a nice shrewd pickup there from Oral Roberts. The question is, who's really going to be that main facilitator? Who's going to be able to bring up the ball? But that said, on the flip side for Oklahoma State, you still have some question marks with this team as well. I do think that Oklahoma State getting that exhibition win over Auburn was nice, but I think that that spoke a little bit more to what Auburn is not going to be rather than Oklahoma State and what they are going to be. They bring in some like Parcel Falah, who last season he was able to spy about 13 points per contest over at Oregon State. He was a rock solid player, but not necessarily a dominator down low. You've got Victorious Miller, who comes over from LSU. He was a nice sixth man that put in their 9 points per contest, but he wasn't any sort of like an amazing 3-point shooter either. And you do have to have that question mark as to who that main 3-point shooter is going to be and whether or not what we saw out of Anthony Roy when he was actually out there on the floor for UW-Green Bay was real or not. He was benched quite a few times and then dealt with injury. It felt like Doug Gottlieb just put him in the doghouse despite the fact that he was averaging, and I'm not even kidding here, in his small sample size of 11 games, 25.7 points per game, but he was also a part of that New Mexico team a few seasons ago that had the big giant scandal and everything like that. Yeah, that's not necessarily great to say the least. And then Robert Jennings was a starter for this Oklahoma State team last year. 5.5 points, 3.5 rebounds per game. Not necessarily a guy that knocked your socks off. So you do have to have some question marks on that front. I do think that the sheer talent of Oklahoma State is going to be able to win out. And with Oral Roberts going through a big giant coaching change, I do think that there's going to be a little bit of a lack of chemistry. Night number one, that actually helps you out to the under in this case. Semi total at a 150.5. I like the under with Oklahoma State. Set them as a 20.5 point favorite. So I'm going to lay up to 20 with them. 6-13, 6-14 on the card. UNC Greensboro is going to be on the road. They're facing off against Kansas State. And with Kansas State, you're going to be finding them as a pretty sizable favorite here of 15.5 points. So on this game, is between 142.5 to a 143. And I'm actually going to be one to lay with Kansas State, mainly because with UNC Greensboro, they bring back, I'm not even kidding when I say it here, nothing from a season ago. They lose each other top 10 scores from a season ago, and that leads to a lot of mystery as to what you're going to get at, I mean, let's call it what it is, any position. They bring in Valentin Pinedo, who he last season was solid over at St. Francis of Pennsylvania, 10.5 points, 6.5 rebounds per game at 6'8", but not a guy that lets it fly from three, and that really was a bit of the lifeblood for UNC Greensboro last year. The last 2 years were a top 58 team in terms of 3-point shooting percentage. You bring in someone like Justin Neely, who was solid over at Albany last year, 11.5 points, 7 rebounds per game. Another guy that really doesn't shoot it well from 3-point range. For Greensboro, a lot of their guards are going to be guys that came in from the non-Division 1 ranks, and you bring in a guy named Antoine Jones, who he's got a lot of Division 1 experience. Memphis, Creighton, you go down the list, but you know, he played one game at Bethune-Cookman last year. Last we saw him for a full sample size was over at Central Florida 2 years ago, 4.5 points, shot 32% from 3 points, so lots of mystery there. And then you've got PJ Haggerty on the flip side for Kansas State, which he was averaging when he was over at Memphis last year, 21.5 points, 5.5 boards, shot in the high 30s from 3 points. our range, and I think that Kansas State is going to be a little bit more well put together this year with bringing back C.J. Jones, who was a bit of a part-time starter last year, put in there about 5.5 points per contest. You've got Abdi Bashir, who was a 20-point per game scorer when he was over at Monmouth last year. I actually think that Kamari McGriff is a bit of an upside guy as well. Over at UNC Wilmington, he was a nice glue guy that put in there about 11.5 points as a part-time starter. So I do think that this is a Kansas State team that, unlike in past years, and I think that Jerome Tang knows that this is very much a put-up or shut-up year, that they're going to be able to do a little bit of a better job of being able to get things rocking and rolling here. I do think that the chemistry is going to be a bit better, and I just flat out think that UNC Greensboro is going to be quite disappointing this year. And then the add of Marcus Johnson as well for this Kansas State team, the big man that comes out over from Bowling Green, 16 points per contest. Looks like Glenn Big Baby Davis shooting 39% from three. I do think that Kansas State finds a way to get the job done, and I do think that the Kansas State offense is going to be relatively solid this year, but Greensboro, when they don't have a lot of three-point shooting at their core, they're a very slow and controlled team. Mike Jones, you ask who, and I say Coach Mike Jones of UNC Greensboro, he throughout the years has had his teams playing well outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game. As a matter of fact, last year, 341st in terms of total possessions per game, so I think that that leads to a little bit of a lower scoring slog in this game, so I set my total at a 140.5, like the under with Kansas State, we'll delay up to 20 with them. 615, 616 on the betting board is Lindenwood on the road against Texas Tech. Texas Tech, a 31.5 point favorite, total on this game between 143.5 to a 145, and did set a total of a 143.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the under. Lindenwood was actually a top 125 team last year in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, and I'm willing to take 30 plus here with Lindenwood. I did set them as a 29.5 point underdog. I don't think that Lindenwood is going to be like terrorizing the OVC or anything like that, but for Lindenwood, they actually bring back a few rock solid pieces from a season ago. Jadis Jones last year, he's a bit undersized at 6'5". He's certainly going to be having his tough times with DJ Toppin, who JT Toppin last year was averaging 15 points, 8 boards. He's, in my opinion, probably going to be an All-American this year, but I mean, 12.5 points, 5.5 rebounds per game, that's relatively respectable. Mekhi Cooper is someone that when he was at Miami of Ohio last year was a starter with about 6 points, shot 39% from 3-point range. That elevates a team that was well outside the top 300 with regards to their 3-point shooting percentage last season. And Jalen Booknight, if I'm not mistaken, that's of relation to the Booknight that was playing over at UConn many years ago. He was a guy that, when he was out there on the floor for the team last year, shot 36% from three, 4.5 points per game, was limited to 15 games due to injury. I do think that there's a little bit of upside here, and this is going to be an undersized team with Lindenwood, but you've got Kevin Anthony and Milos Nikadic, who they are a pair of 6'10 big men that have a little bit of upside there. Now, for Texas Tech, this is going to be a team that's going to be very special this year. I mentioned Mr. Toppin, and what he's able to bring to the table. While you do lose Darion Williams from a season ago, you still have quite a bit of that core that was just so good from a year ago, as well as you're going to be looking to Mr. Anderson to really help out in the backcourt. As Christian Anderson last season, he was able to put in there 10.5 points, a little bit over 2 assists per contest, shot 38% from 3-point range. I fully expect him to have the ball in his hands a little bit more. Bit of a changing of the guard with regards to point guard spot as well, because you don't have Elijah Hawkins out there, so that leads to a little bit of question mark. But Tyree Bryan, I think, is going to be able to fit like a glove with this system. Last year at Santa Clara, 10.5 points on 43% 3-point shooting. He's able to give you some rebounding, and LaJuan Watts is another 6'6" versatile guy. He comes in from Washington State, where he was averaging 13.5 points. Another guy that shot 42% from 3-point range. A little bit of question mark in terms of the overall facilitation for the team, but this is going to be a rock-solid offense once again. You've got a guy in Toppin who's going to be able to dominate down low, but I do think that this is an improved Lindenwood team as well that is going to be able to generate a few turnovers in this spot. So it is a circumstance where I set my total at a 143.5. Texas Tech, they didn't necessarily play at a snail's pace last season, but as we know, this is a coaching regime in Craig McCaslin, who he's used to playing super duper slowly. So I'm in on the under, and I'm going to be willing to take those points here with Lindenwood, 617, 618 on the card. Iowa, they're going to be playing us a Robert Morris. Old Bobby Morris is an underdog of 19 to 19.5 points. So on this game, between 142.5 to a 144. Said Iowa's a 15.5 point favorite, so I'm going to be willing to take the points here with Robert Morris. I do think that for Iowa, they're going to be hurt by the fact that they do play so slowly. Now, I don't think that under Ben McCaslin, column, they're going to be as low as they were a season ago. Out of 364 Division I teams, they were 364th in terms of total possessions per game. They were really good on the defensive side of things, 33rd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. And they bring in a Robert Morris transfer and Alvaro Fulgarias, who last season, he was just an absolute menace. He was averaging 14 points, shot 41% for three, 9 boards, 3 assists, stealing half per contest at 6'9". That really elevates his team as they bring over the likes of Bennett Sturt. So we remember how versatile he was over at Drake last year. Follows his coach, Mr. McCollum, on over here. 5.5 assists, 4.5 boards, 19 points per contest. Shot 39% from 3. Cam Manny Woo's rock solid down low. He, even at Wyoming, was a nice rebounder last year. He was putting in there like 5.5 boards per contest. But for Robert Morris, even though they do lose much of that core from a season ago that made the NCAA tournament, they were a team that was about 80th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. I do think that Coach Andy Toole has done a nice job of being able to retool this roster. They're going to be looking to someone like Tazir Smith, who JUCORecruiting.com has a top 100 junior college transfer. Ryan Prather is going to be one of the heads of the snake after he last season was more of an ancillary piece for the team. Part-time starter in that point, shot about 40% from 3-point, not necessarily a primary ball handler, so that leads a little bit of question mark as to what you're going to be able to get in terms of that main point guard spot. Darius Livingston is a freshman that they're feeling relatively good about. Nicholas Jakutelis should be able to do a nice job down low after he at North Carolina A&T was able to supply 9+ rebounds per game. And then Obong Okon, he's a true 7-footer that comes in from Alabama State. He wasn't necessarily a guy that gave you a lot of scoring for his career, only averages about 2.5 points per contest, but a guy that's able to give you 5 boards, a guy that's able to do a nice job in terms of being able to give you some shot blocks. I do think that Robert Morris is going to be playing a little bit more of a slow and controlled style. I think that the backcourt is going to be suffering a little bit, but I do think that this team is going to have some strength down low, and that'll keep them lively in this game. Set my line at 15.5. Won't take the points here with Robert Morris. Think that this is going to be a slog. Set my total at 137.5. I'm also in on that under. 619, 620 on the card. It is Duke, and they play OSU Texas. Texas is back to being an underdog. They opened up as a 7-point underdog, Texas did. Even midday on Monday, I was seeing some 7.5s. As I'm recording, this is now up to 8.5 with a total of 152.5 to 153.5. I am going to be in on the under. I set my total at a 149.5. Everyone raves about the fact that Duke was number one in all of college basketball last year in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, but what they forget about is that this team was eighth in the country in terms of their rebound percentage. They're also a top five team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And Duke, ever since we have seen the changing of the guard and we have seen John Shire take over, they have not been an up-tempo team. Like, they were 274th in the country last year in terms of total possessions per game. And now you've got Sean Miller taking over a Texas team that was relatively mid-tempo last year. Sean Miller's teams, they do like to gun it, but even at Xavier last year, they were about 115th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. That's fast, but that's not warp speed fast. And for Duke, they actually do return some of those backcourt pieces from a season ago. Obviously, the Boozer brothers, that is going to be the main attraction. And I fully expect the Boozer brothers to be just absolutely amazing. Amazing. Cameron Boozer is a guy that's getting just a lot of hype right now, but I am bringing in a guy like a Caleb Foster, who he two seasons ago was averaging about 7.5 points per contest on 40% three-point shooting. Had to take a little bit of a step back last season with all the talent on the roster. He's now going to be playing a big role for the team. Isaiah Evans last year shot over 41% from three-point range. He figures have a big role with regards to this team, and you still have relatively good size as well. Patrick Ngagba, hopefully I said that correct, at 6'11". He should be a menace down low. Malik Brown, who is injured during that NCAA tournament run, being able to get him back, I think that that is very rock solid for this unit. And then on the flip side, you've got a Texas team that they do bring back the likes of a Tremont Mark, who he spent some time over at Houston. He's always been a nice, solid double-figure scorer. Not necessarily a guy that would be a game-breaker, but is always a nice ancillary piece. And then Jordan Pope, 11 points per contest, shot 36.5% from three-point range. He's back. Chandel Weaver was a 40% three-point shooter with about 6.5 points per game. The guard play should be very solid for this Texas team. The question is, what are you going to be able to get down low? You bring in a gentleman from England and Louis Obria. What are you going to be able to get out of him? Is he going to be able to lock things down? Because I don't think that you can necessarily rely upon John Clark to be a dominator from day number one down low. You bring in Simeon Wolcher, who's going to be able to help out the backcourt as well. But I do feel like there's a lot of imbalance with this Texas team. You've got some really good guard play, and you do bring in Cameron Heidi at 6'7" from Purdue as well. But he's not necessarily a guy that's going to help you out down low. And I think that with Duke, they're going to be able to win this game from within. This is technically a neutral court game out there at the Spectrum Center, but that's out there in the great state of North Carolina, so you're going to get a Duke crowd here. I set Duke as a 9.5-point favorite. I am willing to lay up to 9 with Duke, and I'm going to be in on the under, so my total at a 149.5. 621, 622 on the card. Southern Utah is on the road. They're facing off against Arizona State. Sun Devils are a 16.5-point favorite. 150.5 is the total, and with Arizona State, I made them a favorite of 14.5 points, so I'm going to be willing to take the points here with Southern Utah. Southern Utah did a really good job of running teams off the three-point line last year. They're actually number one in all of college basketball in terms of percentage of opponent shots that came from three-point range, so they do force things inside, and for Arizona State, they do lose their main guy in Jaden Quantens, who was very good for them down low from a season ago, and they lose just so much of that team from a year ago, and Bobby Hurley just has not been able to get things rocking and rolling here over at Arizona State. Now, I do realize that for Southern Utah, they lose quite a bit from a season ago as well, really ever since they had the coaching change a few seasons ago, and they brought in Rob Jeter. It's been a little bit, shall we say, tumultuous for the team, losing a guy like Jameer Simpson, who was able to supply 16 points per contest. That's going to be a big loss for the team, but I think that Chuck Atsuya, who he was a guy that was just glued to the bench over at Fresno State a season ago when he was over at IU Indy a few seasons ago, saw some nice minutes, was a nice non-Division I player a few years ago. I think that there's a little bit of upside there. They're very much going to be relying upon Zach Bell to be able to get things rocking and rolling in the backcourt. Guy that supplied 9 points per contest as a starter over at Jacksonville wasn't necessarily a like primary ball handler or anything like that, but a guy that should be able to elevate this defense. And I do think that for Southern Utah, they're going to be a little bit better on the defensive side of things. And then Isaiah Cottrell, he's a nice upside guy, a former top 150 recruit of West Virginia and UNLV. The only thing that's really been holding him back is injuries. He's been injured in pretty much all but one of his years where he was actually a starter at West Virginia during the 2021-22 campaign. And then for Arizona State, again, you don't have a lot down low, so Cottrell might actually be able to win that battle down low for Arizona State. Now, Arizona State, they do bring in a few guards that I do think is going to be able to elevate this roster, as you're going to be very much relying upon Adante Holloman, who comes over after he in the Sun Belt last year was averaging about 17 points, 2.5 assists per game, shot 38.5% from three-point range. So Arizona State's trying to go a little bit more back to their roots of being able to have some solid three-point shooting. And Marcus Adams, he's a very nice bona fide player, a former top 75 recruit of BYU and Kansas last year over at Cal State Northridge, 16 points per game, shot 39.5% for three, 5 boards per contest at 6'8", so nice versatility. But you've got a few guys that come in from the non-Division I ranks. Al McCabe was able to put in their 7.5 rebounds per game when he was over at Oakland last season. They're banking on Bryce Ford to be able to give you a bit of production as well. Ford was over at Toledo, 7 points, and is a career 39% three-point shooter, but it's never really been a primary scorer as well. It just feels like a bunch of misfit pieces with this team. They're very much going to be looking to Mo Odom to be able to run things after he at Pepperdine was able to give out 7.5 assists per game, but also had over 2.5 turnovers per game. Has never really played beyond the WCC level. I've got my question marks here with Arizona State, and I do think that this Southern Utah team is going to be a little bit improved on the defensive side of things, and I think that they're going to look to slow things down this season. So I set my total at 146.5. I like the under, and anything north of 15, I'm going to take those points with Southern Utah. 623, 624 on the card. Samford plays us at Portland State. The Vikings at Portland State find themselves as an underdog here of 10 to 10.5 points. So on this game, it is 143 to 143.5. Mike Bibby making his coaching debut, and he's got himself quite a bit of good talent on this roster, but I'm going to be looking to fade it here. I set Stanford as a 17.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it. Now with Stanford, they were able to get a 20-win season in year number one after they changed the guard to Kyle Smith. Chisa Mokpara was a big part of that. He was averaging about 6.5 points per contest, shot 46% from three-point range. And then Ryan Arjawal, who he stands 6'6". I like his overall game. He does a nice job of being versatile with 7.5 points, 5 boards, 2 assists, as a bit of a do-it-all wing. Now, they do have a lot of pieces to turn over from the backcourt, and when you have a guy that is 7'1", that's putting in their 20 points per contest that you have to replace from a year ago, that makes things a little bit difficult, but I'm just going to be willing to trust in Kyle Smith over Mike Bibby as a coach, as Bibby just really doesn't have any sort of college coaching experience whatsoever, and I do think that his team is going to be able to get rolling, and the fact that they retained Jalen Henderson, their top scorer from a season ago, that's actually a very good sign for the Sacramento State team. They do a nice job of being able to bring in some transfers, as Jeremiah Cherry was a starter over at UNLV. He stands 6'11". He's able to give you about like 5 or so rebounds per game, so That's going to help him out. And Profit Johnson, he was a primary scorer over at Fairfield with about 13 points per contest. Not necessarily a guy that's going to light you up from three-point range. And you've got Shaquille O'Neal, the son of Shaquille O'Neal, in the fold. And Shaquille is actually the general manager of this team, by the way. So nice little fun fact there. You're banking on, though, Mikey Williams has had some off-the-court concerns, I think is the best way of being able to put it. He was at Central Florida, played about half the season last year. A guy that, if things are right, he might be able to really get things flowing. A former top 150 recruit. We just don't know what he's able to fully do and if he's able to be out there on the court for the entirety of the season. So you do have a lot of question marks with regards to this team. They should be able to do a relatively solid job down low, but I do think that with Stanford, they are going to be the better coach team, and I do think that just the craftiness of Kyle Smith wins out in this case. I said my line 17.5. I'm going to be willing to lay the number here with Stanford. And so I told 141.5. I like the under. 625, 626 on the card. UNLV is going to be playing us a UT Martin. UT Martin is a underdog of 17.5 points. 144.5 is the total. Did somebody tell a 145? So you're at the 144.5. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the over. Now for UNLV, I do have to fade them in this spot. I can only set them as a 15-point favorite, mainly because they're just dealing with so many injuries. I know that they had Josh Pastor come out and say that his team is incredibly banged up, and you're going to be having a lot of guys that are probably going to be playing in this game at less than 100%, and their true 7-footer that comes in the offseason, he is going to be completely out of the fold for the foreseeable future as well, so that really hurts this UNLV. It's going to be a brand spanking new team, and the gentleman that I'm referring to in Emmanuel Steven is a man that is going to be out for quite some time. Miles Shea should be good to go. He comes over after he was over at UC Irvine last season, averaging 12 points on 43% three-point shooting at 6'3", so he's going to be a nice head of the snake in the backcourt. Howie Fleming Jr. just feels like he's played college basketball for 17 years. He was averaging 12 points per contest over at UT Rio Grande Valley, shot about 42.5% from three, so it's very clear that Josh Pastor was selling out for a lot of three-point shooting, and I do think that Pastor's team is going to be a little bit more up-tempo when he was over at Georgia Tech. It was never a team that necessarily played slow. It's not like they just completely exploded or anything like that, but do have to have your question marks down low without having Steven in the fold. And for UT Martin, this has been the international man of mystery over the last few seasons. They had things taken over by a junior college coach a few seasons ago that looks for talent and, shall we say, unlikely places, but now they bring in a guy in AJ Hopkins who only was averaging about 3.3 rebounds per game for the team. They're going to be looking for him to take some strides forward as a 6'6" wing, and I've been hearing some good things about him during the offseason. You've got Lamon Niang, who last year gave this team about 3.5 rebounds per game as a part-time starter, began his career over at Cal State Northridge. I think that he's going to be able to take some strides forward. And then Afad Trinket, he was averaging about 8.5 points per contest, shot only about 30% from three, but he's a guy that's able to give you some nice facilitation, 3 assists per contest. These are all guys that are nice holdovers from a season ago. And then you've got Dragos Longu, who is averaging in the neighborhood about 3.5 points per game over at San Diego last season. He was dealing with a little bit of injury 2 seasons ago. It was more of a 5-point per game score, a guy that's able to handle the ball at 6'6". You've got a lot of positionless basketball. You've got a lot of guys that have a lot of different flags coming in from Russia, Romania, Lithuania, Slovenia. They've got a lot of guys that played professional basketball overseas, and I don't think that they are going to wilt under the moment. I do think that Ty Price, who comes in as a freshman, is actually a relatively good under-the-radar find as well. So I think that UT Martin is going to be able to hold in there with a UNLV team that's a little bit banged up, and I do think that UT Martin is going to be looking to play a little bit more up-tempo this season as well. So this is a circumstance where I'm going to be willing to take the points with UT Martin. I set them as a 15-point underdog, and I'm in on the over. I did set my total at a 145. 627, 628 on the card. Louisiana Tech, they're on the road facing off against Nevada. Nevada is a favorite of between 9.5 to 10 points. 136.5 to 137.5 is the total, and made my total 137.5. So at a 137 or less, I'm going to be in on the over. We were playing a lot of unders to start with, so I have to get a few overs up there on the board. And for Louisiana Tech, they're not necessarily a team that's going to be looking to just blow it by you. As a matter of fact, both of these teams last year were a little bit more slow and controlled. For Nevada last year, they were actually 338th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. That's not like Steve Alford, though. I think that he's going to be getting things a little bit more of tempo this year. I think that he was just playing the hand that he was dealt a season ago. And for Louisiana Tech, this is typically a little bit more of a defense-oriented team. They were 261st in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and now it is a little bit of a passing of the torch for them because Daniel Bott Bacho, the Bacho Man. He is out from a season ago, but for Louisiana Tech, they did a nice job of being able to just scour the transfer portal, reload in terms of being able to have that identity of really good interior defense. I do think that having Sir Isaac Heron, who began his career over at Oral Roberts, is a nice add, as he's a guy that for his career shot 41% from three. Last year over at Oral Roberts was a starter that was able to spy about 5.5 points per contest. And then William Jeffries. I think that this is an upside guy that comes in from Pittsburgh, was limited to just 3 games last season. I think that he's going to be able to do a nice job of holding it down low. Is he going to be on the level of Daniel Bacho? No, but at the same time, I do think that he's going to be able to provide some relatively good pop with regards to his front court. And then having a guy like a Caden Cooper back, I think is just absolutely massive. With Mr. Cooper, this guy did a really nice job last year of giving the team 8 boards, a steal and a half, 9.5 points per contest. So he's a nice do-it-all sort of player. And then Scooter Williams, who comes on over from the Southland Conference, he's going to be a nice 9 to 10 point per game scorer for this team as well. And then for Nevada, you do lose a lot of those headline pieces from a season ago, so they're going to be up against it, losing Nick Davidson, who was able to spy about 7.5 rebounds per game. He's on over to Clemson. That hurts his team quite a bit. It means that Joel Armatrading, who was solid last year, he was able to supply the team with 5.5 points, 6.5 rebounds per game. He's going to be solid there, but not necessarily a, shall we say, prolific scorer. And they're going to be looking in the backcourt to Tayshaun Comer along Corey Camper. Camper was over at UTEP. He's able to generate a steal and a half plus per contest. He's able to give you some nice double-figure scoring. And then for Comer last season at Evansville, 16 points per game. Not necessarily a great three-point shooter. And Louisiana Tech was very good at being able to guard the three-point arc last season. I think that Jeffries is going to be able to do a nice job on the post. You have question marks with his backcourt in Nevada with Tyler Rollison never really being able to get things rocking and rolling. And I do think that for Louisiana Tech, they do a nice job of being able to give a little bit of strife there. But again, with Louisiana Tech, they lose their primary ball handler as well, which I think is going to be affecting them. For Louisiana Tech last season, they had a guy that was giving out right in the neighborhood of about 8 assists per contest in Sean Newman Jr. That leaves a big giant void. They really had no other sort of primary ball handler. I think that as a result, you see some sloppiness with this Louisiana Tech offense. I do think that Nevada is going to be able to crank things up a little bit more. I do think that they find a way with Comer Company to be able to get the job done and cover this game, especially for a little bit of a later game for Louisiana Tech having to travel from the SEC on over to lovely Nevada. I did set the Nevada Wolfpack as an 11.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number and set my total 137.5 here at the 137/136.5. I'm in on the over. 629, 630 on the card. Oregon plays us Hawaii. The Rainbow Warriors are a 12-12.5-point underdog. 145-145.5 is the total. Set my total 137.5. I'm in on the under. Hawaii is typically a team that just really doesn't give you a whole heck of a lot on offense, but they do a nice job defensively, and you saw this Rainbow Warriors team do a solid job of being able to slow down opponents last year and do a good job on the glass. Hawaii last year was actually a top 20 team in all of college basketball in terms of their overall rebound percentage. What's the elixir to that, though? Having a true 7-footer, Nate Biddle, who last year over at Oregon, 14 points, 7 boards, a block per contest, and he was shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point, going to that point of Hawaii, about 249th in the country in terms of total possessions per game last year. And for Oregon, they're not really a fast team, not necessarily a slow team. They're typically a mid-tempo team. Last year, they were 136th in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game. I do think that they're going to need to play a little bit more slowly in this game because Jackson Shelset, who is going to be their primary ball handler, he's right now dealing with a hand injury. He's probably not going to be playing in this game. As a matter of fact, we're probably not going to be seeing him really the first 2 or so weeks of the season. So that puts the onus on more of the ancillary guards to be able to step up and to be able to give this team a little bit of fight. And I do think that they're going to be able to do so, as I have some faith in Jamari Phillips being able to step up. Last year, he was glued to the bench, wasn't able to give you a whole heck of a lot of anything whatsoever. He's going to be looking to play a little bit of a bigger role, and I do think that he's going to be able to do so. And then additionally, you're going to need to have this team just have their low post pieces be able to do a nice job. You've got KJ Evans, who he was a former top 25 recruit. It's never really been a bad player, but has never really been amazing for this team either. I think that he's going to need to take a few steps forward. I think that he's going to be able to do so. And then you're going to need to be looking to having Sean Stewart, who comes on over from Ohio State, to be able to give a little bit of help to Nate Biddle. I think that he's going to be able to do so. Began his career over at Duke, was a nice starter over at Ohio State last year, 5.5 points, 5.5 boards per contest. So I think that Oregon is going to be looking to win from within. And for Hawaii, they have to replace much of that backcourt from the season ago as well. So the injury to Shelset, that's not magnified as much, because with Hawaii, you lose the likes of Marcus Green and company that really ran the show. Now you do bring back the top scorer from a season ago, and that'd be Yatis Nemishka. He was averaging about 12 points per contest at 6'8", a good 3-point shooter. But Hawaii last year was not a great three-point shooting team. Hunter Erickson, who comes over after he began his career at BYU in Utah, after figuring that he's going to be seeing some ball handling 2 years ago at Utah, he was able to give out a pair of assists per contest off the bench. Never really been a guy that has saw a ton of minutes, but for his career, shot about 35.5% from three-point range. I do think that there's a little bit of upside there, and then you have a pair of guys that play with each other over at Evansville. Tanner Cuff comes in as a 6'7", little bit of a wing last season over at Evansville, 9 points, 6 rebounds per game. And Yasan Toomey, 2 seasons ago, he was averaging 5+ rebounds per game over at Evansville. Saw some solid minutes over at Seton Hall last year. So I do think that Hawaii's going to be rock solid down low, but I just don't think that they hold up against Oregon. And with Oregon, even though they're missing Jackson Shellside, I do think that they find a way against a Hawaii team that turned over their entire backcourt. I set my line at 15.5. I'm going to be willing to lay with Oregon, and I'm in on the under. Some I told 137.5. This is the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we hit the extra games. 631, 632. Long Beach State is on the road against San Diego State. San Diego State is a favorite of 20 to 20.5 points. 137.5 to 138.5 is your total line. This is my total 135.5. I'm in on the under. Now, Long Beach State was pretty dreadful with regards to their defense last year. They're outside the top 300 in terms of the points allowed on a per possession basis, but they're also 259th in terms of total possessions per game. Coach Acker over at Long Beach State was actually an assistant at San Diego State a few seasons ago, so he very much knows the system of San Diego State. That helps out a little bit, but even with that, I said San Diego State as a 21.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Now, we've seen San Diego State sometimes play a little bit more up-tempo in non-conference play, but Magoon Gwath, there's a lot of question mark there. If he somehow, someway plays in this game, it's probably going to be relatively limited, so I'm not expecting him to be able to give you a ton in this game, but even with him out, you bring back Reese Waters, who 2 seasons ago, he was a big part of that team that was able to make that deep run in the NCAA tournament, a nice double-figure scorer that began his career over at USC. He missed the entirety of the season last year, so that is absolutely massive for this bunch. You've got a guy, Nick Boyd, who last year was playing 13.5 points per game, leave the program, but you bring back Miles Bird, and I think that he's going to be able to take over just really that leadership role after he was supplying about 12.5 points, 2.5 assists, threw in their 2 steals per contest. Very versatile, nice do-it-all sort of player for this team. And for San Diego State, they're not necessarily a bunch that did a ton in the transfer portal, but the guys that they brought in, I really like Latrell Davis, who was over at San Jose State, so he has familiarity within the conference. 38% three-point shooter, 11 points per contest. I thought that that was a very nice pickup for them. And then on the other side of things, you've got a Long Beach State team that they had to turn over much of that roster from a season ago. It was very clear that year number one under Mr. Acker, it just didn't necessarily go well for them. They did retain one of their main rebounders, though, and Daryl Michael Zabiero, who was able to give the team about 7 rebounds per game. He should be able to help out a bit down low. And Rank Rodzik, who comes over from Detroit as a true freshman last year, he was averaging about 8.5 points, shot 41.5% from three. It's very clear that Long Beach State is looking to be a good rebounding team with a lot of three-point shooting. They're going to be looking a lot to Isaiah Lewis, who averaged 9.5 points over at Little Rock last season, doled out 3 assists per contest. He's going to have the ball in his hands quite a bit, as he's the one guy on the roster that you can't really rely upon for three-point shooting. But Shaquille Bender comes on over from NN, 11 points per contest. He's another guy that is able to give you some nice versatility. He threw in their 3.5 boards, pair of assists per contest, but he was a little bit hampered with his three-point shooting last season as well. Just a very strange Long Beach State team, one that had massive issues with turnovers last year. And Isaiah Lewis coming over from Little Rock, he had his turnover woes that really entire team did last season as well. So lots of question marks on that front. And I do think that San Diego State is going to be able to pulverize them and keep this whole scoring set by total 135.5, like the under, and I'm willing to lay up to 21 here with San Diego State. Now we hit the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-609, 306-610, Kentucky is playing us to Nichols. Nichols is a 29.5 to a 30.5 point underdog. Totals between 115.5 to a 151.5. Did semi total at a 155.5. I do like the over. Now, I do think that Kentucky is going to be a little bit better on the defensive side of things, but you saw under Mark Pope in season number one, Kentucky was one of the most up-tempo teams in all of college basketball, and having Otega Owe be able to supply 15-plus points per contest, that was rock solid for them. They are not going to have Jaden Quanten to begin the season. He's still recovering from that massive surgery, but you know what? You've got a team that is going to be much better down low. They bring in the international man of mystery, and I think his last name is Jelovic. I'm not even going to try to say the first name, but Andre Jelovic, he should be able to give this team some versatility at right around about 6'11". I love the fact that they bring in Denzel Aberdeen, Pasadena as well. He was part of that Florida team that won the national title last year, 7.5 points per contest. Just a nice winning player that's able to shoot about 35% from three-point range. And while they don't have someone quite like a Kobe Brea, who is just an absolute lightning rod from three-point range, you do have good scorers down low, like a Brandon Garrison. I think he's going to be able to do a nice job of holding down the fort while Quantins is out of the fold. And I do think that you're going to be able to get some nice ancillary production in the backcourt as well. And then you've got a true seven-footer, Malachi Moreno. I think a lot of people are sleeping on Jasper Johnson as a true freshman. He's going to be able to have some good production there. And then for Nichols, this bunch loses a lot of what they had from a season ago. They were able to win 20 games a year ago, and I do think that Tavon Sadler is doing a really good job of coaching this team up, but you really don't have a lot outside of Trey English. English is not necessarily a primary scorer. Last year, 6 points per contest. He doled out 2.5 assists per game. He's a really nice facilitator when he's got shooters around him. Who's going to be those shooters that step up around him, though? Is it going to be someone like a Christian Winborn, who, fee for his career, has been about like a 5 point per game scorer? Last year at Iona, he was able to supply the team with about 4 points, 2 rebounds per contest. Has not necessarily been an amazing 3 point shooter. Nichols, if you go all the way back to the House of Clontier era, they've always been a pretty solid team at being able to generate turnovers, but Kentucky is one of the more efficient offenses in all of college basketball, a very veteran backcourt. Sincere Malone for Nichols, he's a guy that has really good versatility. Last season, 5.5 points, 4 boards, 7.5 per contest. Love what he's able to bring to the table, but again, not a guy that's necessarily going to light it up from 3 point range. I think that Nichols is going to be very much hurt from the outside, and I do think that for Kentucky, even without having Quantins in there, they just absolutely pulverize on glass, and I think that Kentucky is going to be maintaining that very up-tempo style from a season ago. So by total 155.5, like the over, and with Kentucky, I'm on the layup to 33 with them. 3-6-6-11, 3-6-6-12. Alcorn State is on the road against Florida State. These Seminoles find themselves as a favorite of 18.5 points. So this game is between 148-148.5, and I did set the Seminoles as a 21.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. A lot of people are going to be making a big much-o-ma-do the fact that you no longer have the ageless wonder out there on the sidelines for Florida State as Leonard Hamilton. He decides to step away from the program, but Jake Morton, who is actually an assistant over at Florida State, he takes over for an Alcorn State team that is relatively gutted from a season ago. They are very much going to be looking to Nick Woodyard to be able to hold things down after he at Stony Brook last year was averaging about 5 points here and there, about 3 rebounds per contest. Just not a guy that's going to light you up from 3 point range for this Alcorn State team. They're probably going to be looking to have a little bit of depth with a 6'10" big man in William Henderson needing to be able to step up after he began his career over at Hampton, spent some time at the non-Division I ranks, and never really got out there on the floor for Hampton. So you have big time question marks there. Omari Hamilton is going to need to be really one of the main headline guys for this team after he last year was limited to 17 games due to injury. When he was out there, 7.5 points per contest, he was a relatively solid player. But I do think that for Florida State, things are going to be working out as they decided to go to the route of one of the former NBA guys and Luke Vlux to be able to take over the program. I think that in the ACC side of things, it's going to be a little bit rough, but I think that in this sort of a circumstance, it's really good having a guy like a Kobe McGee that at Drexel was a double-figure scorer, shot in the high 30s from three-point range. Robert McCray was a do-it-all guy in his 2 years over at Jacksonville, averaging 16 points per contest a season ago. Threw in there 4.5 assists, 5 boards. He's going to be much better than what Alcorn State can throw at him. And then I do think that having a guy like Elijah Jones, who last season he was playing over at St. Bonaventure, was part of a team that played very good defense. He was their main three-point shooter at 39%, threw in their 11 points, 6 rebounds per game. That Florida State is going to be playing some really good positionless basketball. I like the backcourt of this team. I think that they leave a little bit of something to be desired down low. They're going to be looking to a guy like an Alir Mulock, who just wasn't able to get out there on the floor too much for Florida State, but is a little bit of a project at 7 feet tall. But Alcorn State is not throwing at them any size at all, and I do think the Florida State in night number one, they roll against the former Florida State assistant. I did set my total at 145.5. I think that's going to be tough for Alcorn State to really find a lot of offense here, so I'm going to be in on that under, and I'm going to be willing to lay up to 21 with Florida State. 306-513, 306-514. NJIT is going to be on the road against Fordham. Fordham is a double-figure favorite of 12.5 points. So on this game, you're getting it between 144.5 to a 145.5, and night number one of the Mike Magpayo era, I think, is going to be going solid. As I did set Fordham as a 14-point favorite, I'm going to be willing to lay the number. I actually think that NJIT is going to be a little bit better than they have been in past years, as NJIT, boy, oh boy, it was a rough go with the last few seasons, to say the least, but they were able to find a little bit of footing, and they don't lose their entire roster via the transfer portal. So, I mean, that's a little bit of a tip of the cap to Grant Bellemeyer, who it feels like is doing a good job of being able to do this the right way. They bring back Ari Fulton, who last season, he supplied the team with 7 points, 5.5 rebounds, and 6'7", just gives you a little bit bit of this and that. And then you're going to be looking to Cameron Piggy to really be able to step it up after he last season was a little bit more of an ancillary guy, only saw like 2 or so points per contest. So they're going to need a little bit more there. But Jordan Rogers was a guy that was able to supply 4 boards per contest, actually shot over 40% from 3-point range at 6'6". And then Sebastian Robinson, this guy last season was able to put in their 12 points per contest. So I mean, you've got some nice starting pieces there. But with Magpio, he's always done less with more. You look at what he was able to do over at UC Riverside. That was one of the better coaching jobs that went unrecognizing all of college basketball over the last few seasons. And for Mr. Magpio, he brings over a few guys from Hawaii. Marcus Green, who was a double-figure scorer for them last season, I think that he's going to be able to step in right away and be able to give this team some nice production. They bring in a guy in Lewis Lesman, who he was playing over at Harvard last season. He spent 4 years over at Harvard, and he never really was like a super-duper scorer in his 4 years. He averaged about 8.5 points per contest, but he'll throw in their 3 boards. He'll do a solid job on the defensive side of things. 2 years ago, he was shooting 38% from 3-point range, so I like the upside there. This is going to be a little bit of an undersized team. They're probably going to be looking to Akira Jacobs, who he also comes over from Hawaii, to be able to give you a bit more down low. Has only been averaging for his career right around about 2 to 2.5 rebounds per game, but the versatility of Zarik Nutter, I think, is really what sets this team over the top. He was over at Georgia State and Northern Illinois in recent years, averaged 12.5+ points per contest each out of the last 3 seasons. Last year over at Georgia State, he shot in the mid-30s from 3, threw in there about 3.5 rebounds, 2 assists per contest, and I do think that for NJIT, they're going to have a little bit of a tough time matching up with that. I do think that for Fordham, they're going to do a nice job in terms of having good positionless basketball, and a guy in DeJure Reeves, who over the last 2 seasons has been a really good scorer, 17 points per game over at Iona, I think is really what sets them apart. And I do think that for Magpio, he's going to be playing a little bit more of a slower style this year. You recall what he was able to do over at UC Riverside. As things went along, his seams got faster and faster, but started out relatively slowly there. And for NJIT last year, they were about 246th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. So set a total of 140. I'm going to be in on the under, and I am going to be willing to lay up to 13.5 here with Fordham. And wrap things up with 306-615, 306-616. Wichita State plays us at UNC Asheville. Asheville is an underdog of 7 to 7.5 points. 154.5 is the total. Semi-total 151.5. I'm in on the under. Now Asheville, a dreadful defense last year, 315th in the country. Turns points allowed on a per possession basis. But Paul Mills has actually done a solid job with this Wichita State defense. They were 83rd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And for Wichita State, they're a team that I think is going to be a little bit more up-tempo, but not necessarily super-duper up-tempo this year. Last year, they were 97th in terms of total possessions per game, pretty much the same rate that they were 2 seasons ago. I think that that's going to be withholding. And for this UNC Asheville team, it's just very mysterious as to what you're going to be able to get out there in the backcourt. Under Mike Morrell, they typically do play an up-tempo style. Last year, they were 60th in terms of total possessions per game, but losing the likes of Fletcher Abey and company that were so good from 3-point range, that's rough. Now they bring back Toyaz Solomon, and Solomon, he was a double figure scorer that was averaging about 13 points, 7 rebounds per game. That should be able to help out this UNC Asheville defense. But what are you going to be able to get out of the ancillary guards that come back? Like, you've got Connor Dabuski, who's back from a season ago. Last year shot 38% from 3. He was able to supply the team with 4.5 points per game. That's a good place to start. Mitchell Taylor, he figures to have the ball in his hands quite a bit after last year over at South Carolina State. 2.5 assists, 8.5 points per contest. That was a South Carolina State team that just made hockey style line changes, or else his assists per game numbers would have been much, much higher. But we also have DJ Patrick, who 2 out of the last 3 seasons was limited to 5 games or fewer due to injury. Last time he was fully out there on the floor, 10 points per contest over at Charleston Southern. So he's a guy that clearly has ability, but you just don't know how close 100% he's going to be. And for Wichita State, I think that they've done a nice job in terms of being able to elevate their offense. After last season, they were 339th in the country in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage, bringing in Keenan Giles, a top scorer over at UNC Greensboro last season, 15.3 points per game, shot 40% from 3. That's a good place to start. You're going to be able to be rock solid down low, despite the fact that you lose your main big man in Quincy Ballard, because they bring in Caron Boyd. He was over at ETSU last season, 8.5 points, 7 boards, a steal per contest. That guy that tries to shoot it from 3 doesn't necessarily do the world's greatest job there, but also bringing in the Berg, Will Berg, just wasn't able to get out there on the floor, playing in the shadow of the likes of Trey Kaufman Wren, playing in the shadows of Zach Edey. He's a 7'2" big man that comes in from Purdue, and he should be very rock solid for this team. Emmanuel Okafor is someone that began his career over at Seton Hall, and Louisville actually saw some decent minutes over at Seton Hall last season. Wichita State is clearly forming a little bit more of a down-low identity. I do think that Michael Gray Jr. is going to be able to give you some good production as well. Last year at Nichols, 11 points per contest, 40% 3-point shooter. Wichita State should be a little bit better from 3, and they should be able to very much control things down low. If Jared Valencia can get back to the 40% 3-point three-point shooting they had two seasons ago when he was over at Monmouth. That's going to be big for this team as well. Did set a total of 151.5. I'm going to be taking a shot on this total under. And with Wichita State, I'm willing to lay up to 11 with them. And that'll wrap things up for the Tuesday edition of Cusco Superstyle, part of the Beeson Family Podcast. Big thanks to Rob Donaldson, who does great work with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Cusco Soups, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, Larry ZM, the meme does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And I'm with you guys every single day on this podcast, breaking down every single one of these games. And I will be back with you guys once again tomorrow. Thank you.